Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Welding instructor Alex DeClaire knows VR training platforms like ForgeFX help students master their skills.
There's a big learning curve with welding. Virtual reality simulates that exact muscle memory that they need.
Learn more at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! Understand
that? Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Stephen Godfrey, Alex Kirshner. You remember last year when we talked about Georgia Tech changing coaches? Ooh. And I was like, hire a black guy, basically. The gist of it was just go hire a black guy. Well, Godfrey, Georgia State did that pretty much.
Mm-hmm. They just hired a black guy. Yes, they did in both senses of the phrase. Yes, they
just picked a random guy.
Not a random guy.
Walking around everywhere in Atlanta.
They just walked around. They walked around Atlanta and said, one black, please. They hired Del McGee, who, interestingly, this is not his first, second, third dance with a potential Sun Belt head coaching job.
You're wearing, I believe, the hoodie of one of them, if I recall correctly.
What am I at liberty to say? He was vetted thoroughly by Georgia Southern in the search that ended up with the hire of former USC head coach Clay Helton.
Del McGee, by the way, was the running backs coach at Georgia and has been tabbed as an absolute ace recruiter and one of the backbones to that staff, along with, by the way, Fran Brown. So what's interesting is, and this is an aside, Georgia is getting into its brain drain era. Obviously, Alabama has had myriad brain drain eras during Saban's run. And now Georgia is kind of in that here as key assistants start to get plucked off. Also interesting that key assistants are getting head jobs here, and it's key black assistants getting head jobs. It's just interesting.
So the headline of this episode is going to be, is Georgia running out of blacks? ?
Yeah, that'll be the one.
I'm intrigued by this.
Please
hire.
Don't clip that, Hector.
Because Georgia State under Sean Elliott, the former head coach who left to go be an assistant at South Carolina after spring ball had already begun, by the way, was weirdly apathetic about recruiting high school players from around Atlanta. And we have done the conversation on this program before. No, it's not as simple as Atlanta add water. Now you have a good roster. Now you're going to win the Sun Belt. It can't be that simple. It's never been that simple. That's a very one-dimensional way of looking at college football roster building. But seriously, Georgia State wasn't that interested in being an Atlantan college football program. They just weren't. If you looked at where they went and got players, this was not a backyard bred program under Sean Elliott, and it didn't work. And so many other Sun Belt programs had runs or mini runs or at least one or two up years where they looked like they were a threat to be serious in this conference for a while. And Georgia State was just never one of them, except for the first half of this year before they lost their last five or six games and completely tanked. So I am interested in what Del McGee is going to do about that. He sounds like he is going to do something about that. I think that much like with Fran Brown at Syracuse, it's not as simple as you were a really good recruiter at Georgia, so you're going to be a really good recruiter at Georgia State. But
okay.
I'm compelled by this because I think it's going to be a new day. It has to be a new day because there's no reason why Troy and South Alabama and Coastal Carolina, yada, yada, can have runs in the Sun Belt and Georgia State never can. There's no reason for it. And I'm interested if Del McGee will be the guy to do it.
On paper, all of this is correct. It is inarguable that there will be a new day. And also, look, this was necessary. Before everyone gets in on this, like, it's hard to be a college head coach and it's just a, no. Look, Sean Elliott wanted to go back to South Carolina. There were obvious family concerns there and interests. And honestly, I don't think his heart was ever really in it. This was something that, okay, Richard, if you listen to our premium episodes at splitzoneduo.com, in fact, I'll throw this out to our hardcores if you're out there. Sickos Assemble, Trans Am, all y'all, let me know. I think we first mentioned the rumor of Sean Elliott going back to South Carolina two cycles ago, maybe three. It's been that long of just sort of tepid results at Georgia State. Because it took so long for this to finally bear fruit and for Elliott to go, yeah, I'm just going to go back. I'm going to be, you know, an assistant coach in the SEC. Georgia State has just kind of languished in the process. On paper, this hire, and I did not mean to sort of co-brand or to like have an Easter egg here on the sweatshirt I'm wearing. It's just, it's like the last week of winter where I live in Nashville and I just wanted to raw dog a home field hoodie one more time. Georgia Southern should be terrified by a hire like this. But we have talked about the on-paper potential of this program in so many different ways, so many different times before this, that yes, on paper they needed a change. On paper, I think this is the maybe the most obvious make a minority hire job in the FBS. Now, all this has happened. I will say, though, to Alex's point, it's not just add X and water to bear fruit at Georgia State. This is a program with no winning tradition and no culture. And those are, it's very interesting to me that the Sun Belt is usually defined by previous winning cultures that are imported in. And when you try and manufacture one, it tends to fail at the Sun Belt / sort of CUSA level. Georgia State still has to overcome that part. However, this should make programs like Georgia Southern terrified.
What is also noteworthy here is like, there is sort of more of the there is an underlying notion of the jobs that black coaches actually get. I don't know if that all the way applies in this case, but what I mean is, look, you can talk about it. It's nice that Sean Elliott gets to go back to being a family man and all this kind of stuff, and it's good for Sean Elliott to go back to a place where he loved and a less stressed job, da, 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 da. The guy left his job 3 days into spring practice. All right. So I just want to get clear that I don't think that's okay. Because if his quarterback would have done that, y'all would have crucified him. Not y'all two. I mean, the royal y'all would have crucified the kid for quitting on his team during spring practice. So I do want to keep some energy towards what I don't think is an okay thing for the leader of a program to do. So that now Del McGee takes over a job at the end of February, which isn't terribly easy. And obviously the portal window is now open for Georgia State for another 30 days. And then the after spring practice portal window is going to open up right after that. So there is, I am interested in what this roster turnover is going to look like for the next 5-6 months out of this. I don't know what the hell to expect out of a Georgia State team September 1st, what it's even going to look like. And that is late to try to backfill the roster attrition that he's going to get because of when he started.
Real quick, that job opening in South Carolina was open on Beamer staff something like 30 plus days. This tells you that Sean Elliott was probably not the first pick for Shane Beamer. And I'm not explaining away what he did in terms of the ethical sense that Richard hit. What I'm saying is it's very obvious they went back to Elliott after probably other candidates didn't pan out. That's how this happened.
My last note on that, Kennesaw State becomes an FBS program this year in Conference USA. I would add them to the list of schools that this doesn't seem great for. If you're worried about a possibly more active Georgia State,
wildly different cultures.
Yeah, but only so many football players in the sea, though.
Downtown Atlanta versus probably the whitest exurb possible, and you know, north of Cobb. The other thing is this: it's an offensive style situation where you have Bohannon, you have a very much 1985 Georgia Southern happening at Kennesaw State right now. I think, Alex, the one, it should strike fear into a lot of the Sun Belt peers. And it very much could. I just think it's going to be 2 years from now because, as Richard mentioned, this guy just doesn't have a lot of time to even it. Hey, guess what? Guess what, guys? Year zero. Let's move on. Yeah. Year zero, though. Year zero, Del McGee.
If you start a job.
It's so rare that I give that out
if
anymore.
If you start a job on March 1st, yeah, man, you get a year zero. Congrats.
Yeah, you get a year zero.
Atlanta Coaching Hour continues. Just wanted to flag this one while we go through the news this week. Did you guys see that Paul Johnson just let Jeff Collins have it on a radio show this week?
Before we get into this, maybe it was last week. Give as much context on how this came up, because the way I haven't heard the audio, but I've interviewed Paul Johnson 3 times in my career. I obviously know Collins pretty well. Was this as unsolicited or just sort of like spontaneous as it seemed? Because PJ will give you diamonds, angry, grumpy diamonds out of like really without much prodding. If you establish a comfort level with him, Alex, was it as simple as him just being like, oh, and another thing?
I don't think that he was, I don't think it came out of thin air. I believe that he was asked a question that in some respect touched on Jeff Collins. I want to credit, this is a via here, but just, it seems to have actually been said, went and cross-referenced it with other people who were looking for it. On the Bill Shanks radio show, Paul Johnson does this interview, which Sports Illustrated's Georgia Tech outlet transcribed and relayed to the public. And I came across this on, I think, Twitter, and then read it in detail because it is amazing. Paul Johnson did not seem to be a fan of the way that Jeff Collins talked about, referenced Paul Johnson's tenure at Georgia Tech when he got there. So a couple years ago, Paul Johnson retires.
You will remember, for the listening audience, if you recall, the first spring practice Georgia Tech ever had under Jeff Collins, or excuse me, the first spring game, I should say, that Georgia Tech ever had under Jeff Collins, they come out in the flex bone, the quarterback claps his hands, and they go into the shotgun, and the crowd cheers. What crowd was on hand? Cheers.
I was there.
Look, there were a lot of things that a lot of Georgia Tech people were a bit tired of. Russell Athletic was one of those things. We're not, you know, it's not just the option offense that was the only thing from the 1990s that was in play at Georgia Tech well into the last decade, actually into this decade. No, it was 2019 or so, I think, that Johnson left. Anyway,
it's okay.
You don't usually get a coach just absolutely letting his predecessor have it, his successor have it, excuse me, successor have it. A couple of years ago, Jerry Kill, in his special way, absolutely went off on PJ Fleck in an interview. This, though, was exceptional. I'm just going to read a few excerpts from this. And Paul Johnson's feeling about Jeff Collins and the way that he treated the Johnson era when he got to Georgia Tech, said, you know, he just distorted everything when he got there. I would just call a spade a spade. I don't care. I got no respect for the guy. I can say what I want. He went in and distorted everything that was there and acted like we had not won a game and lied about who he inherited, lied about the offensive line, lied about us not going to the high schools in Georgia. He went and told a bunch of whoppers, and it came back to get him because there was not much substance there. Also said, I had one particular coach who called me who had really pounded them being Jeff Collins, Georgia Tech, at home in Atlanta. And he told me, Paul, it is a circus. And he goes, I told my kids before the game in the locker room, and he said, congratulations, you just beat a team that physically had kicked our ass for the last 3 years. That's under Johnson. And then Johnson says that this coach explained that Georgia Tech was very easy to push around without Paul Johnson and with Jeff Collins being there, and also said that there were opposing coaches in the league, plural, who would call him about Georgia Tech and were laughing, would call Johnson to laugh about Jeff Collins, Georgia Tech. So anyway, you don't get enough coaches who will talk shit about other coaches specifically with names attached into recorders nowadays. And so I'm glad that Paul Johnson just did not hold back. You don't get enough of this.
Couple things. One, I can verify independently what Johnson said about other coaches dogging out Collins, because I would do the Athlon, you know, conference by conference anonymous coach. Ooh. They no ACC assistant I spoke with liked that staff, specifically Collins, while he was there. I'm trying to pinpoint who that was, and it won't be that hard because it's a team that Georgia Tech lost to in the first season. They only had 3 wins that year. They upset Manny at Miami, and they beat NC State by 2. I think it's either David Cutcliffe at Duke.
Oh, that sounds right. That could be.
Or I think it might be your boy, the Nard Dog.
Oh, that could be. Narduzzi and Jeff Collins got into a bit of a tiff after a game, I think, in the COVID year. And as Richard has said on the show, if you're trying to place bets on which coach is in a public beef with another coach, Pat Narduzzi is never outside the top couple of names on the odds board. So absolutely, could have been Narduzzi, could have been Cut. I think those are great estimates. I think those are very possible picks that you just made.
I do love how you were like, it's not going to be that hard to narrow it down, and then said they only won 3 games.
Well, Georgia Tech only won 3 games. So it couldn't have been those two.
I know. Like, it's not hard to narrow it down. Oh. It's not like they went 10-2 that year.
But it's also you, like, Richard, you know, you kind of know the teams the guys in the industry who are good. Also, it says in the quote, one of them lined up in a PJ Flexbone formation to like kneel it out on them. So, I mean, the tape's out there somewhere. Also, I can tell you, it wasn't like it wasn't Justin Fuente. Okay. Obviously it wasn't Manny because they beat them. I think this would have been Bronco era Virginia. It wasn't him. Kirby didn't give a shit, to be totally honest with you.
Just to be clear, there were only 10 teams that only 10 games that he won at Georgia Tech.
Yes.
So, you can't, I guess in the point of it being maybe tougher to narrow down, there's a lot of teams that beat them. Pretty challenging.
I'm also going to be honest with you. You know who it might have been? Dabo.
Interesting theory.
Don't sleep on it.
Interesting theory.
Don't sleep on it because
I feel like I can find this
me
out.
Me and Godfrey
like
have referenced this before. You will recall there was, I don't know if it was this year, but there was a year where like they go to Clemson and the Georgia Tech players are like lifting on the field before the field. And I know that did not rub Mr. Sweeney the right way, so to speak.
That was his first game, Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech. I remember. Then they were like benching. They were like benching on the field, and then they go and play the game, and they lose by a billion points to Trevor Lawrence. It was tough.
That was a night debut. I'm looking at it right now. That was a night debut, and I want to say it was like a Monday night, Labor Day night kind of thing, where they did open the season. First year, they had. I'll get into my role in this in a second. They lost 52-14. And that score is not indicative of how bad it was. This was also Clemson was number one in the country when this happened.
Did Clemson win the national championship? But it was a Trevor year, so either way, yeah.
I think they were coming off of it. Yeah. I can't remember. It doesn't really matter. They were just insanely overmatched. Those of one you who've been asking for years on the single wing, I'll do the Jeff Collins show now. I pretty much just have to do. I got to spill the notebook on my time at Georgia Tech in that period and what I thought was rotten in Denmark, because everyone else is doing it. I mean, Paul Johnson's doing it. I might as well do it.
Steven, what's the area code in Atlanta? Like 737, right?
No. Not close.
There's a few.
404, my friend.
Yes.
404.
404 is the one you're thinking of.
Sorry.
You threw me for a second because like, 703 is the area code I grew up in.
Here's why. Okay. Oh, wait, there's a 737?
No, where Godfrey grew up.
There's a 7. So. You're probably thinking of a 770. I grew up in 703, but you're probably thinking of 770, which is, the 404 is like when you say Atlanta, it's 404.
Boy,
I'll tell you why I was confused about this situation.
Yeah.
Okay. One year.
Someone Clemson, ran up 404 on them.
Right. Clemson beat Georgia Tech by so many points that it was essentially like the area code of some local, municipality around Atlanta. And there was a year where Clemson beat them 73-7 in Atlanta, and Dabo's kids were getting touches in the game. So it could have been Dabo, is my point. It's a reasonable theory. Reasonable. Just saying it could have. I don't know, but it's a reasonable theory that you lay out. Georgia Tech fans, sorry about that. Tough segment. not fun to hear. If you want to feel a little bit better, you could perhaps buy some Georgia Tech gear at homefieldapparel.com. They've got a tremendous vintage Tech logo bomber jacket that is out right now. Homefield has honestly been, I think, rising as a player in the bomber jacket field in general, and not just in college football. They have a NASCAR, like a Hendrick Motorsports collaboration right now, with like the big, you know, red multicolored DuPont bomber jacket that's been going around. Look, if you're looking to spend some money on a nice piece of clothing, the home field bomber jacket might be the place to do it right now. Steven, that was me kind of leaving it to you to talk about the history of the NASCAR thing, because, you know.
Yeah, you didn't really signal anything there.
I was just hoping that you would do it because you know more about that sport than me.
Robin's racing.
I think I know. I think of three out of three SED, I know all the information, all the NASCAR knowledge on SED comes from this.
Well,
this particular
I will say, hold on a second now. As a veteran of NASCAR Thunder 2004 or 5-ish,
nice.
And a one-time Daytona, Pepsi 400 attendee, I know my way around a track, all right?
Okay.
I know Rubin's racing.
Okay. Where did Hendrick finish last week in Daytona? Week before last.
Current
NASCAR?
It
was a photo finish.
Buddy, I got nothing. It was not a photo finish at Daytona. It was a photo finish at Atlanta on Sunday because I saw the picture. Shout out to the homie Art But Make It Sports, who had an incredible mashup there of the photo finish and some painting that he found in the Rolodex of his mind, which bothers me in how beautiful it is, his mind specifically.
It's crazy that people still think that that's fake, that he's doing AI grabs and stuff. That's just nuts to me. The home field effect, if you're for some reason interested in partnering with home field, is that Hendrick Motor Racing drops the collection, this beautiful collection, by the way, Indiana connection, obviously, there, for those of you who don't know. And then they finish 1-2 in Daytona, which is pretty amazing.
That's right.
Pretty amazing.
That's the home field effect. Homefieldapparel.com. The code is SCD20, SCD20 for 20% off your first order. Also want to shout out our dear partners at Nokian Tires, who have just had another tremendous winter of making sure that people's cars have the best chance possible to grip the road in tough conditions. And if you live in certain parts of the country, it's going to keep being difficult for the next, I don't know, couple of weeks. I think the groundhog predicted that there was more winter, and that was 25 days ago as we record this. So you're not into easy driving conditions just yet, unless you live in a warm climate. And even if you are, Nokian Tire is crucial all year round.
Godfrey, do you think Sterling Martin has ever driven a car with Nokian tires on it?
I hope so.
Do you think...
There's so many jokes. Why did you pick Sterling Martin?
Do you think Bobby Labonte has ever whipped a car with Nokian tires on it?
I think Jeff Gordon has.
Okay. I was worried there for a second.
What about Darrell Waltrip? I can name some guys.
Are we just naming guys now? Are you guys naming? I'm shocked name some because guys. Anytime I drop 90s references, like I mentioned, like a Sega console on the show, and no one knew, you guys had no idea what I was talking about. But all the names you're dropping right now are like peak mid 90s NASCAR.
Do you think Juan Pablo Montoya has ever whipped a car?
Not so much. Not mid 90s.
With Nokian tires.
I mean, are we just naming guys? Because, like, I'm going to win. How about Buckshot Jones? How about Lake Speed?
Steven, I think that it's gotten to be very immature the way that people think that men just, like, and that all sports fans really like to just sit around and, like, name random athletes. Like, we have a lot more depth than that. And I can tell you right now that if Dale Earnhardt Jr. were here right now, he would say the same thing. That men have way more depth than that to just do that childish activity all the time.
Dick Trickle.
Splitzoneduo.com.
Do you know
that's real?
Do you know what my name is? You think I'm not familiar with Dick Trickle?
Oh, it's true.
Come on now.
Splitzoneduo.com is the home of premium content, bonus content, subscriber only episodes, newsletters, and more. It is a tremendous way to support this show, to help us make it. Subscribers are the lifeblood of Splitzoneduo. And not just that, you don't just get the fuzzy feeling of helping us thrive and making sure that we can continue to do this podcast for the long haul, but you also get, frankly, a lot of bonus episodes, a lot of newsletters, a lot of Q&A opportunities, community engagement opportunities to talk with like-minded college football fans who might see the sport in a similar way to you, or be willing to argue with you in a respectful but serious, impassioned way in the comments. We love the community that we have built there at splitzoneduo.com on Substack, and we would love it if you would join. You can get a month free if you join for an annual membership.
Facts.
Fellas, a couple more news items to hit today before we get out of here. The NCAA video game from EA Sports is indeed coming. There's been a lot of rumor mongering, I guess I would say, around this game for a couple of years now. But just wanted to note that in the last week or so since we've recorded, they have gotten thousands of players signed up via group licensing for, I think, about $600 each to appear in the game. That is going apace, EA has said. And a bunch of schools, I think every school in FBS has confirmed its participation in a game coming out this summer.
Alex,
so it's happening.
The one thing that I know you want to touch on this because it became sort of a touch point, the $600 number in and of itself. I think both of us agree that like that number's like right around it. I do believe EA has said that they will have select players who they will pay more in sort of a social media campaign or what have you. I think college fans, some of this is an offshoot of NIL in general, where you remember a couple years ago, and I cannot believe I'm about to give this guy some flowers, but you remember a couple years ago when Darren Revelle tweeted something along the lines of like college athletes have pretty much zero market value and everybody like went crazy about it. And then you kind of dig into it and you're like, yeah, of the 11,000 of them,
football players. Much,
like it's look, and so it. Look, but I say to say it's an offshoot of the NIL thing where like people think all these kids make millions, and as we've said on this show, we've sort of talked through your slotting and your salaries and all this sort of stuff. It ain't that, man. And so yeah, $600 and the game itself. If you'd have done that 15 years ago, we might have had games coming every single year, and we may not have had this big gap in time.
On the $600 amount that's going to the players for being in this game, I swear I desperately want college football players to get as big a bag as they can. I will never root for the mega corporation to give them as little money as possible. I want the players to have more money than I want Electronic Arts to have the money. I swear to God. The organizing groups that have tried to argue that $600 is and a copy of the game is a horrendous deal for these players and urging them not to take it are giving them very bad advice. There is no connection whatsoever between the appearance in the game of most of these players and whether people will buy the game. There is none. And there is currently no collective force that has the bargaining power to make that number go up. There is like it is to me really poor advice to tell any of these 11,000 players not to take $600 to be in this game. I do hope that the contracts are not ridiculous and you're not signing over all of your likeness rights in perpetuity to be used however by EA. And I'm thinking that that probably is not what's happened, because I think the schools would probably, hopefully someone would raise a red flag about that. Ultimately, it's $600 to do almost no additional work and be included in something where your presence just doesn't change the math for EA, which, by the way, is like the game itself is a fraction of Madden and is going to be a fraction of Madden even this year a 10-year break.
Definitely.
One thing to add to your point, Alex, is wait till you find out how much players get paid to be in Madden, most of them.
Well, they get paid more, but I've been told that it's like thousands of dollars per player who are in Madden, but the difference is that the Madden payment is looped in with a bunch of other group licensing products that are also included, and the NFL has a union, so it can collectively bargain to make that number go up.
Bingo.
College football doesn't have it. Urging these players not to take that money is just, in this case for this year, to me, is just asking players to give up $600 for nothing, like for no discernible benefit for athletes' advancement. And so I'm not with it. I just don't think it makes market sense.
Your boy is not talking during this segment because, as if you listen to the Single Wing and a couple other shows, I have worked on the game about this much This is an audio format, so
no, it's not.
I'm making YouTube a very audience. Small.
The YouTube audience. Just I'm making saw very that.
So yeah. Your boy has worked on it a teeny tiny 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 bit. Also, please don't think that I've done anything like computery. I never even learned how to use the publishing software at Vox in 10 years. Ask my bosses. I don't know how to code. but I have worked on the game, and I am under NDA, and so I can't wait to talk to you guys about what I've done. Otherwise, I'm hushing up right now and playing NCAA 14 and EA's new Jedi game.
Boy, I'm about to light immensely. Your ass up with complaints about that game when it comes out.
Oh yeah, good. Well, man. You know, I already field full cast complaints, and let me tell you what I do with those.
Last item of the week, news item here. UMass is going to the MAC, back to the MAC, because UMass had a cup of coffee in that league many moons ago, and is going to become the 13th school in the Mid-American Conference. Not that many. Still not a big league. Remember, a couple years ago, the MAC sniffed around Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee. Didn't pan out. Wasn't entirely clear to me which side of that didn't do it, but I think it was probably for the best that it didn't happen. I find this.
Alex, do you know the song that I was just attempting to sing?
You have to.
Of course.
Wait,
I do.
I feel like that song expands generations.
No.
Why are you trying to hold me up here, Richard? I'm trying to do a segment.
What's the name of the song?
I wasn't listening to you because I was too busy trying to read the
segment.
That's
crap. What's the name of the song?
I didn't
hear what you were saying.
No, he doesn't know. That's all right. That's fair.
What's the name of the song?
I honestly didn't. I was so focused on my notes, Richard, that I honestly didn't.
Okay, here's a hint. The conference is mentioned in the title.
Was it Return of the Mac? I wasn't paying attention.
Boy, that is a. He connected on a spoiled pitch.
I wasn't listening to you. I was tuning you out. I was trying to read the segment while you were distracting me. This move of UMass to the MAC is, to me, one of the bleaker moves of conference realignment. I think it's tough. The MAC does not have a ton going for it right now outside of its sense of regional connectivity and pride and distinctness of being like the Group of Five conference in the middle of the country. And they've sort of tampered with that before by adding Buffalo. And obviously over the years, there have been some different stop-ins in the MAC. But UMass is just not a culture fit. And arguably, it gives Buffalo a companion, but they're still not that close. They're like 6 hours drive from each other. And it takes a conference that has at least maintained some identity for itself while facing enormous commercial headwinds and competitive headwinds, and it dilutes that a bit. So I don't love it.
Sometimes, because like you go to the team site and go through the media guides if you want to, and that will provide a school provided set of data, which isn't always honest and thoughtful. Sometimes when you use Wikipedia, the brevity of the prose is just absolutely beautiful. Let me read a small portion to you. In March of 2014, the MAC and UMass announced an agreement for them to leave the conference after the 2015 season. Do you guys know why? Do you remember? Mm-mm. Okay. I had just started as a national reporter. It's the only reason I remember this. Because it was due to UMass declining an offer to become a full member. So there basically was they were a MAC football only member. The MAC said, we want UMass to join for all this kind of stuff. There was an offer there where like, all right, you can play two more seasons as a football only member if you decline full membership. This is my favorite part of it. This is where Wikipedia is funny to me. Then UMass announced it would look for, quote, a more suitable conference for the team. Possibilities included becoming independent or joining the American Athletic Conference, Conference USA, or the Sun Belt. In September, UMass announced they would become independent.
It was because
they said, fuck you, MAC. We're going to go to market. And guess what the market said to UMass football? We're good.
I mean, look, it's deck chairs on the Titanic. This guarantees them a slice of whatever new college football playoff revenue payout will go to the conferences and the leagues. Awesome. Have a ball.
It's fine. I mean, honestly, like here's, you know what? They're in a better situation than UConn. Because UConn won't accept an invitation to something like the MAC, even though their football program is arguably as bad as UMass's right now. Right,
but at least at least UConn has the basketballs. You know what I mean? Like,
but that's UConn's what I'm saying. UMass
has something. UMass has hockey. The UMass men's hockey team is a national championship caliber. Okay, program.
Alex.
No, I'm just
Alex.
Look. Hey, Alex, you said Alex, something,
brother.
I'm obligated to push back,
big man. College.
They've got women's field hockey too. I'm sure,
brother. College hockey ain't moving the needle like either basketballs, no. Including one of which
in
is
New
the
England,
preeminent dynasty that sport has ever seen.
In New England, Hockey East, where UMass is going to keep playing because the MAC doesn't have hockey, is a somewhat big deal.
Sick.
Richard, you never taken the Amtrak up to go see the Beanpot? You've never done that?
Even, like, again, we're talking about how much that actually moves the broad needle.
No, it does not move a financial needle. All that I'm pointing out is that UMass, at least in this move, is sheltering their best program.
So the MAC should have taken Northeastern, is what you're saying?
Pretty much. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's fine. It's whatever. I think if anything, a bunch of Southerners listening to this just figured out that Buffalo is way closer to Ohio than it is to Massachusetts.